Welcome to Edu Leadership Radio. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and my goal with each episode is to bring you the best in professional practice for school leaders. I'm joined today by Anne O'Doherty, Director of the Danforth Program for Educational Leadership, and Steve Fink, Executive Director of the Center for Educational Leadership, or CEL, both of which are housed at the University of Washington. And I was a part of the Danforth Program for Educational Leadership a number of years back, and I've also participated in CEL professional development through Seattle Public Schools. Anne and Steve, thanks so much for joining me today. The Danforth Program has been around for about 25 years now, and you are offering something that, as far as I know, is pretty much unprecedented, this idea of a performance guarantee for your educational leadership graduates, people who are coming out of the principal preparation program there. Tell me about that guarantee and why you feel confident offering it.
Sure. So I'll start. When the dean, Dean Stridicus, Tom Stridicus, decided to move the Danforth program under the CEL umbrella, it was with the intent to bring the program closer to the epicenter of actual practice, because, as you know, the Center for Educational Leadership, CEL, works with school and district leaders both in this state, regionally, and across the country. So I was real excited about that the possibilities, and the dean and I spoke some more. And one of the things that both of us feel very strongly about is that we can't just continue to hold our K-12 schools accountable without also holding the universities and the preparation of both teachers and school leaders to that same level of accountability. So therein lies the genesis of the guarantee, that we felt strongly that for our subsequent cohorts in the Danforth program, that we really needed to get clear about what are the specific competencies that they need to be able to perform, and how do we measure those, and then what can we actually guarantee to school districts. So right now, what we're anticipating is that on an iterative basis, we'll identify certain competencies every year, one or more, that we'll actually guarantee. And the really exciting part about this, and the reason why we think the University of Washington is so well poised to do this as opposed to most universities, and as far as we know, we're the only university in the country that's actually going to, attempting to do this right now, is that we have the Center for Educational Leadership as the umbrella organization. So we envision that the way the guarantee would work, with many details to be worked out, of course, is that our graduates, when we guarantee a certain proficiency, so for example, one of the things we're envisioning is we'll be able to guarantee our future graduates will be able to use the district selected teacher evaluation instrument with proficiency, be it the Danielson instrument, being the CEL 5D+. Mm-hmm. And if we find out, based upon some agreed upon criteria that's yet to be determined, that our graduates can perform at that level of proficiency, then CEL will provide the intervention, the support, the remediation, whatever you want to call it, without any cost to the district. And that's the beauty of the partnership between the College of Education and CEL, that because we're an umbrella arm that actually does the coaching work, we can do that. And we think we can underwrite that guarantee accordingly.
That's terrific. And it seems like there's not only the accountability piece that you highlighted there, that preparation programs also have an accountability role when it comes to the performance of schools. But there's also, I think, a very valuable feedback loop that may not have really existed before, especially with people, for candidates who get hired into districts other than, the top couple, Bellevue and Seattle, that hire, a fairly high percentage of the graduates from Danforth each year. And I wonder if you could speak to that aspect of feedback and how you see that playing into the kind of new directions that you might take Danforth in, just given that, this is a program that's been around for a long time with pretty consistent leadership. And now as the kind of founding director of the Danforth program has retired and you've taken on this role, how do you see that feedback playing into the future direction of the program?
Well, I think that that's one of the critical aspects of the shared accountability, that we are, we're here to support what happens for students in their schools, and that's through our students who are graduates working, well, even before they're graduates, even as they're working as interns in the different school districts. So being certain that we have strong relationships with the school districts in terms of building a partnership and pipelines of leaders, and then going back through that feedback loop is making sure that our graduates are performing at the level that we would expect that they would, based on the quality of education that they receive in the Danforth program. We have currently over 550 graduates of Danforth, and over 500 of them are still in the Puget Sound area, and they are serving in a variety of capacities, but generally they're assistant principals, principals. They're central office based leaders. They're working as assistant superintendents and superintendents. So we have a really strong cadre of leaders that are already out there that are Danforth graduates. And we believe that they're strong quality leaders. They're well selected, excellent preparation, the strongest internship in the state, the most robust internship. We require 1,000 hours of internship, and that's more than double what many of the other programs require. So we already went into this with the understanding that our graduates really are doing the kind of work that we would want them to be doing, but at the same time feel that it's something that's a great partnership to be able to offer with CEL, that, you know, CEL has 10 years and plus experience in working with in-service leaders, and Danforth has 25 years experience working with pre-service leaders. So it's a pipeline initiative between the two of us, and then to be able to extend that out to the pipelines with our school districts. So we had a convening a couple of weeks ago, and we invited many of the school district leaders in this area who are superintendents and also some of our principals and some outside thought leaders as well, to come together and identify those core competencies. But we'll be going back with those core competencies as we are starting to flesh out what are the performance measures, what are some of the learning experiences going to be, how are we going to be measuring that someone has met the standard, and how are we going to go back and make sure that those standards are in place when people are in practice. So we'll be continuing that dialogue with those districts and any other districts that'd like to join us with this as well.
Excellent. So there's an idea there that you touched on several times of a pipeline. And mm-hmm. I know when I was in Danforth, there was one district that was particularly well known for having a very well planned pipeline. And I wonder what you see as kind of the lay of the land in terms of that pipeline. What does it look like when districts don't do a good job of developing a pipeline of leaders? And what does it look like when they do?
Well, I think that we've certainly have some excellent models across the country. At our convening back in October, we had Susan Korich from the University of Denver with the Ritchie program. She's been working with the Denver Public Schools for the last 10 years. They're one of the Wallace Grant recipients in terms of the pipeline initiative that's happening at the national level right now. And they're very strong relationships between the university that's doing the preparation and the school district. When you're seeing a really strong pipeline, that's what you see. So there's early identification of who those school leaders could be from the teaching, from people who are currently teaching, and the intentional selection and development of those teachers into teacher leaders, taking them through another series of learning experiences that are very structured and very intentional to move them from teacher leader to building level leadership through assistant principal and principalship, and then continuing that idea of selectively identifying the next wave of leaders who are going to become central office leaders, who will then serve in assistant superintendent and superintendent roles. The very strongest partnerships have quite a bit of financial support and financial investment on the part of the district. And that includes everything from providing either full-time or part-time internships, which are fully, fully supported or fully funded internships, all the way to actually paying for the tuition costs and the tuition and fees costs for people who are in their programs. So if you're identifying those leaders that you want to see leading your schools in a few years, districts see that as being part of their investment and part of their professional development budget, is to identify those leaders and then provide both the internships and the tuition support for the people to be in the program.
That's fantastic. So let's talk about that that convening. So you brought together educational researchers, you brought together superintendents and principals and former Danforth participants, and looked at all the competencies that that go into making a great leader. And I understand you settled on 6 competencies, and you're starting your guarantee by focusing on improving instructional quality through collaborative professional practice. Can you talk to us about why you're starting with that competency and where you see your curriculum going to move things in that direction?
Well, I'll start with the guarantee and let Anne actually talk about the curricular component. So amongst the many, many things that effective principals have to do in order to be effective, you know, we think the research is quite clear, and our experience corroborates this, that amongst all of the actions and leadership attributes, etc., the ability to actually improve the quality of classroom teaching is the single greatest lever to improve the achievement for all of our students. And certainly for us, you know, we have 25 years behind us with the Danforth being focused on creating equity-minded and equity-dedicated leaders. But at the end of the day, what's most important is not just to be able to talk and advocate for equity, but to be able to actually deliver on equity. And we think, again, that lever lies in improving the quality of instruction. And there are some core competencies that are required in order to do that well, everything from first and foremost knowing what good instruction looks like, being able to articulate and explicate what makes high quality, and what makes low quality, to being able to grow the practice of teachers, to be able to provide feedback to teachers that's actually useful, because lots of feedback to teachers isn't always the most useful, also to seize upon patterns and themes for professional learning so that instructional leaders can lead the learning of their teachers. So there's some real critical components of what we call instructional leadership, and that's why we wanted to start on that. And what's interesting, and the beauty of the great partnership we have, you know, with Danforth and Sell here, is that at Sell we've been working also on developing a shared language and a framework for instructional leadership. We have long had our framework for teaching, which is the 5 dimensions of teaching and learning, but we've just now published what we call our 4 dimensions of instructional leadership, which kind of looks at what are the most critical components of the many components that comprise a principal's job. So that's why we're starting on the instructional part. And I'll let Anne talk more about the curriculum piece. Mm-hmm.
So what we've been seeing in the last several years with the Danforth program is an opportunity to really make the instructional leadership component more robust. And having spoken with some alumni over the last several months, you know, that's really a component of the program that has dramatically increased over the last few years. And one of the, you know, so for example, some of the things that we're already doing is our students spend quite a bit of time looking at instructional frameworks and the idea of teaching and learning frameworks, and then using those frameworks in classroom practice walkthroughs. We also conduct learning walks at different campuses. So we've been to, in this area, we've been to Sammamish High School in Bellevue. We've been to Midway Elementary in Highline, and we've also, just yesterday, we were at South Shore Pre-K-8 in Seattle Schools District. So our students have an opportunity to take those frameworks and actually put it into practice and go on beyond that as well. So one of the critical pieces that we're seeing as we move forward with this is launching off from this more robust instructional leadership piece is also How do our graduates, while they're in the program, how do they learn the tools and the mechanisms and the levers that are necessary to really build capacity of teachers around those same ideals? So not just that the principal is the instructional leader, and you know, years ago, that's what we heard about so much. You know, we had the effective schools correlates in the 70s, and along about the mid 80s to the 90s, you started hearing about instructional leadership, and it usually was instructional leadership resting on the shoulders of the principal. And what we're seeing more and more in the research about what's truly effective is when there are instructional leadership teams of teachers who work together with the principal.
Right.
Just one instructional leader anymore at a campus. So providing our students with those experiences and the kind of the sheltered, scaffolded experiences to really be able to leverage change by shaping culture, and also by building capacity of their teachers that they work with to become instructional leaders themselves, to be able to go into classrooms and see what that classroom practice looks like, to help teams develop common assessments, to work with teams of teachers to analyze student work, to really see what are the outcomes of instruction and start making some of those critical decisions about what changes need to happen to improve the instruction for students and improve the student learning.
That's great. And as I look at the wording of that competency, improving instructional quality through collaborative professional practice, I think there's a theory of action embedded there that, as you say, is different from what we might have looked at a few years ago, where instructional leaders were seen as kind of a warrior who would go and, you know, attack bad teaching. And, you know, it's kind of a single person holding that leadership. And it sounds like now you're saying, we see that leadership as much more distributed among a number of people within the school.
Exactly. And it can go all the way through. You know, we have data in a day as a process that our students have used for the last several years as well. And that's doing learning walks with students involved. And we will be doing that at Cleveland High School sometime in the next few months, doing a data in a day with their high school students as members of those learning walks. So it's not just building the capacity of the teachers, though that's certainly a key important element. But then how do you engage with families through the same processes, and how do you engage with students? Because there's no one on the campus who knows more about instruction, whether or not it's quality instruction or not quality instruction, than the student who's sitting in the classroom. They know whether or not they're getting the instruction that's really necessary and needed, and being able to tap into that student voice is certainly can be a part of that.
I would also say that that's inherent in this theory, though, is still that while leadership is distributed, the principal is the leader of leaders, and as such must know fundamentally what good teaching and learning looks like. And I will just offer tangentially, and we can have a whole other conversation about this if you would like, is that we have a growing body of data now based on what we call our five dimensions of teaching and learning assessment, where we actually assess school and district leaders' proficiency in observing and analyzing instruction. Mm. And with over a database of over 3,000 participants in this proficiency-based assessment, what we're seeing across the country, large districts, small districts, urban, rural, et cetera, is that the instructional expertise of our school and district leaders is insufficient to lead the kind of instructional improvement agenda that we all aspire to. And so, you know, fundamentally, we have an instructional expertise challenge on our hands, and we recognize that we can't just assume that because somebody has been a teacher or somebody has come through the K-12 world and wants to be a principal that they automatically know what good teaching and learning looks like, that we actually have a responsibility to assess for that competency and possibly doing some more teaching around that.
Hmm. Well, I think that's huge, especially when we talk about the apprenticeship of observation for new teachers, you know, this idea that primarily we teach the way we were taught. And it sounds like you're saying we have that same tendency as instructional leaders that we think good teaching looks like whatever kind of teaching we were doing when we were in the classroom, and that might not have necessarily been all that great. Is that kind of where you're coming from with that?
Yes, definitely coming from there, but also coming from the fact that, you know, I like to use the medical field as an analogy, that if you, like, a a new medical doctor just getting his or her MD, we are, you know, we could be pretty well assured that this medical doctor has a deep knowledge of human anatomy, the musculoskeletal system, the circulatory system, the endocrine system, right? And that is a common language. It's a common definition. It's explained the same way. And in order for that doctor to even begin to do a diagnosis, that doctor has to have that body of knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. So the question is, so what's the corollary to instruction? And one of the things that, you know, we found early in our work, which was led us to develop our instructional framework, is that, you know, you gather 50 principals in a room and have them watch a lesson, or 50 superintendents, choose your 50, and there's no agreement on whether that lesson was quality or not quality. And then, so that's at one level, that there's no agreement. So that was kind of alarming. But then when we unpack that a little bit, and we would hear people, we'd say, well, what made this lesson a high quality or low quality lesson? And they may start talking about something like student engagement, but their definitions of student engagement were so widely differing that it was striking and quite alarming that we did, you know, unlike the medical profession, we don't have standards of professional practice for teaching and learning and leading. And it, first and foremost, you have to start with creating a clear picture and a common language so that when we're working toward improvement and we're focusing, let's say, on student engagement or classroom environment or culture or purpose, you know, you name it, that we're all describing it using the same terms, the same vocabulary, with the same vision and picture in mind.
Absolutely, and I've been through that process of watching those videos and doing the assessment to provide the feedback on the lesson, and you know have really had my eyes opened by the discussion that followed that and that kind of lack of common language and lack of agreement. And had almost an identical experience one time when Charlotte Danielson, who came up with you know, a very widely used teacher evaluation framework, had us do a similar exercise and said, you know, watch this lesson, look at the rubric, and you know, and discuss what you think. And similarly, we were all over the map. And this was with, you know, one of the leading evaluation frameworks right in front of us. So it seems like there is both kind of a professional norm that needs to be established, that we need to have this common language of what good teaching looks like. And we have a number of very promising approaches to that are really being implemented across the nation and certainly across Washington State. Now, one thing I want to ask tangentially here, Steve, especially since you brought this up, And if this doesn't make it into the final thing here, but I've got smart people on the line, and I just have to know your thoughts on this. So there's a little bit of a push, and I understand when you're doing a cell assessment, you know, you have to use video. You can't bring in, you can't bring in a modular classroom and have everybody watch a real, you know, a lesson right in front of them. As I've reviewed the Gates Measures of Effective Teaching study, and have been in touch with people around the country who are engaged in different means of measuring effective teaching or just knowing what we're looking for with effective teaching, there seems to be a pretty strong emphasis on what happens in the moment instructionally, and less emphasis on what happens behind the scenes to contribute to high levels of learning for students. Things like planning, things like assessment, things like working with families, things like following up and providing feedback. How do you see that playing out? Because I definitely see this bias towards towards kind of instruction in the moment or the observables. I'm curious on your thoughts on that.
Oh, sure. Well, and there are some people in our organization who can, you know, talk about this actually far more eloquently than I can. But if you look at the evolution of our teacher evaluation instrument, which is called the 5D+, which is the companion piece to our instructional framework. Number one, we developed that with the idea that this is for continuous growth and improvement, not accountability. Mm. And that it, and we have to be very careful to look at what we call the preponderance of evidence gathered over time. Some of that in the moment, you know, real time, And that could be collected in real time. But much of it, just as you're saying, Justin, that can only be collected by looking at artifacts of student work or having conversations with teachers to engage the teacher in his or her thinking about the planning. And so I think you're absolutely astute in that observation that at the end of the day, to really grow teachers' practice and to hold them accountable using the evaluation instrument, but primarily to grow practice because that's what we think we're all about, there needs to be a combination of in the moment and a whole lot of attention to the background of that. And anything that relies solely on the in the moment, needs to be suspect. So, I mean, I think that we would share that observation with you.
Well, thanks. Appreciate your going with me on that little detour here. So I just wanted to ask, Washington State is now in the midst of some pretty big changes in terms of implementing new teacher evaluation systems, as well as new principal evaluation systems. And the guarantee that you are offering as part of the Danforth program encompasses a performance measure and guarantees that principals will emerge from their preparatory experience with a certain level of competency in the six areas that have been identified. And I wonder what you see as the overlap between that guarantee and the work that you're doing and the work that's happening around this state with principal evaluation. How do some of those things connect with each other?
Well, I think the big emphasis for both what the University of Washington, what we're undertaking with the Danforth program and with CEL, and then also what the state is doing is we're all about having students improved learning outcomes, mm-hmm. and that those learning outcomes need to be equitable. We can no longer afford to have some of our students doing well in school and some of our students not doing well in school. It's not a tolerable situation. It needs to be addressed, and so what we're really looking at is how do you improve the practice of learning, and improve that through teacher practice, which is what the teacher evaluation instruments are being proposed to do, and also prepare and improve principal practice along the same lines. That we're all about the same things, and that's to make sure that each and every child receives a quality education. And I think those are the aims of those initiatives, and those are the aims that's the aim that we have as well here with the University of Washington, and the work that we're doing is, whether you're looking at even just what's happening with Danforth and CEL, or if you're going to be looking at our teacher education programs through the Ackerley Network and other programs that are happening at the University of Washington, it's about how does the University of Washington leverage what we know about quality teaching and learning, what we know about quality leadership, and to making changes that happen on the, if you want to say it, on the desks or the tables in front of students every day. And that's really, that's the aim and the goals of the College of Education, as well as all of the different component organizations of the College of Education.
Very well said. Thank you. Well, one final question here. For all of our listeners who potentially are looking at their current staff and thinking about nudging people in the direction of pursuing school leadership, and this is the time of year when I know a lot of applications are due for principal certification programs. What do you say to current principals to help them identify people who have the potential to be the kind of instructional leader that you're looking for in Danforth, and the kind of instructional leaders who can close the achievement gap?
Right. It's somebody who really, I think what we look for, what we're looking for in the people who are coming into the program, is that they be someone who's very strong in their own curriculum and instructional knowledge for the students that they're working with right now. Someone that has already stepped outside of their classroom to take on additional leadership roles. So not someone necessarily who has stayed in their classroom teaching and doing great work in their classroom, but someone who has also reached out to become a department chair, a team leader, an instructional coach, delivered professional learning opportunities for their peers at either the campus or the district level. So someone who's actually already begun to identify themselves as a leader in that way, and someone who's able to collaborate with others, that they see that they're part of a team, that they're not necessarily the person who stands up and says, "Pick me, I am the leader," as much as someone who says, "There's a job that needs to be done. Let me see who else I can get to help me with that work." Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're looking for, are those strong, instructionally focused people who can collaborate well with others and really energize others to work alongside mm-hmm. of them in what is very difficult, complex, and challenging work. It is not easy to teach, and it's not easy to be a principal, and it's someone who has those other qualities, but also has that perseverance, and if you want to call it kind of the fire in the belly to get that job done.
And I would say all of that is well said and absolutely essential, and perhaps a softer factor, but nonetheless, I think critical in my view, particularly with the changing landscape both in the state of Washington and nationally, is what I would call that entrepreneurial leader, that innovative leader, that somebody who is willing to kind of walk the edges of creativity and innovation and entrepreneurship and push those edges a little bit. You know, we have new charter school legislation that has come into the state of Washington. More and more districts are playing with different kinds of experimental models, hybrid blended learning models. And so I think the timing is just perfect for somebody with all of the skills and attributes and desires that Anne laid out, but also somebody that says, you know what, I want to create something that may not quite exist right now, and I want to play in that space of innovativeness and entrepreneurship.
Very good point. Wow. Thank you. Well, Anne and Steve, thanks so much for your time. This has just been a real treat to speak with you and to hear about what you're doing.